Welcome to Girls. Girls is a show for women in technology to show their stories, to show that they are interesting and they are here and they are perfect and they are great. So today I have with me three amazing MVPs. We are in the MVP Summit. And I want to start by saying welcome to you, and I'm happy to have you here. So if we can do a round table and everyone introduce herself.
I'm Kathleen Dollard, and I am an MVP in the languages area in we call it .NET now, and I've been an MVP for about 18 years, so I've been around for a while.
Oh, wow, that's cool. Like your hair, it's cool.
Thank you.
Love
thank
it.
You. Yeah. It's blue, not Azure. No.
I really love it.
Thank you.
My name is Martina Grom. I'm an Office 365 MVP, and this is my fifth summit.
Wow, that's cool.
My name is Lori Lalonde, and I'm a Windows Platform Development MVP, and this is my second year, so I'm still new to this.
Can you tell us a little bit about what you do, your job, your hobbies? Let's start by your job. What do you do for a living?
Well, if I'm going to start, I'm the Director of Engineering for a company called Real at EngageReal.com. And we're a small engineering company, and as the director of engineering, I get the great honor of both helping to run the company and also embedding in teams. And so I get to work on real code all the time. I constantly have a project that I am getting my hands dirty in, keeping
even,
up with
things. Even though you're director of engineering?
Even though we're small, it's great. And as we grow, that's important for me to maintain, because actually doing code. And we do a variety of platforms. I've just spent 5 months in Python Django without being in the Microsoft space. Just moving back into it, and so that's what my job is, and it's great. I have a lot of fun. I get to work with people that are at many skill levels, mm-hmm. and my job is always to take people, either at my job or in the work I do in the community, to the next level of being the developer they want to be, and the person they want to be, and so that's where my passion lies in life.
Oh, I love it. That's awesome. Martina?
Yeah, I have my own company, and we founded back in 1999, and we started doing everything in IT, selling computers, selling software, programming software, and so on, like that was. And in the beginning of the 2000s, we started with development and focus in that area, so we have a good development team. It's also a small company, and we are strongly focused on Microsoft technologies because of our size and what we know and what we do. And I'm the only not developer in that company. So I'm in between the customer and the developers, because I can understand what developers talk and I can translate them into customer wishes and vice versa. And this is the interesting part. And myself, I'm concentrating on Office 365 and cloud services since 2008. And I started doing that, and some of my friends told me, so the cloud, it won't stay. It will go away.
Yeah, right.
You will never earn money on that. Even in my own company, my colleague said, you are crazy. You can do that in your private time, but it's no business behind that. So after a couple of years, we can live from Office 365 and consulting and Azure, and I love that a lot. And my passion is around community. I have a lot of community work. I write my blog and so on, and I just love to help people and going forward and move forward and understand their ideas, why they should do things like they do it now, and so on.
Oh, wow, that's so inspiring. You're so inspiring, Lori.
I've been in the industry for 18 years, all in software development. The last 3 years, I went from full-time employee to consulting. So I work for Object Shop Consulting as a senior consultant, and I go from client site to client site. The projects used to range, anything related to .NET, WPF development, web development. But the last 9 months I've been on the Xamarin contract, so I've been moving more into the mobile space. So I really love it, really love the company that I'm with, and I enjoy this industry a lot.
Nice. That's we have a lot of resources here. Great resources here. I'm very happy to have you, ladies. Okay, I wanted also to know, you talked a lot about community. Martina talked a little bit about her blog. I want you also to, Lori and Kathleen, to tell us more about the community. What do you do for the community? Do you have a blog? How do you share your interests with the community?
it's interesting because mine has changed a lot over the years. So when I first became an MVP, it was because of my work online. So answering questions in the pre-Stack Overflow days. So Stack Overflow really hit it right because of the work we had done in communities that didn't quite hit the mark. And they really made some good choices when they set that up. So now we have Stack Overflow and love Stack Overflow, which is great. But I used to be completely online, as did all MVPs quite a while ago. And then I've gradually moved more into the human touch. I really like to work with people directly. So I'm primarily an MVP because of my speaking and engagement at that level. But I also do engage heavily with the teams to push the products forward. Mm. I'm hoping to do a push into one of the repositories today. That's my hope. And that's my goal for the day today, which is pretty exciting. And also, I do have a blog, but I have not been blogging for about a year, year and a half. My blog sort of fell over. Its tags all got sick. And it was so sad to see all my tags gone that I was depressed. And I haven't gone back to it, but there's about there's many, many things in my head. And so we're hoping to set up a blog space at EngageReel. That should be the next place I am blogging. A lot of that will be on Teams. I'm very interested in processing Teams and the way that human beings as developers make great code, as Lori is with her job as well, and Martina is with her job as well. So we work with people not only in the community, but also with our own private teams where we're a little more intimate and we get a lot more broad spectrum stuff. And so I'm very interested in writing about what I've learned in working with teams, particularly young teams. So yeah.
Oh, that's really nice. Is this the subjects also that you do for your speaking when you go to make a talk?
Well, it's interesting because to stay engaged on the conferencing to me means I have changed over the years with what I'm doing. And right now, I've moved away from cutting edge technology, and I'm doing a series of talks that are aimed at making developers better at core things. I'm about to do 3 days in London at STD Conference Deep Dive, which will literally be, I will make you a better C# programmer. I did a similar workshop at Dev Intersection. So I'm very interested in getting people to remember what an allocation is and remember that GC2 is different than the earlier GCs and really get some of this kind of stuff, because there's so much of what's being put in front of us that we can't understand unless we do that. And so that's sort of right now is my passions around that. But then I also talk a lot about C# 6. So, I do some cutting edge stuff as well. But right now I'm kind of pulled away from the technologies kind of until we get core 5 out. Then I'll re-engage in the real cutting-edge stuff. But right now, I'm kind of just waiting for us to actually get that into RTM and just doing experiments with ASP.NET 5, MVC6, MVC Framework 7, .NET 4.6, all that. It's kind of, not .NET 5, Core 5. There's just so many numbers right now, it gives you a headache. So yeah, that's kind of what I do as part of the community. I haven't answered questions in a really long time, but I'm so excited that there's so many great people out. I'm a user of Stack Overflow, and I definitely go out there a lot to find answers. But that's where my background came from. And I wrote a book someplace along the line, and I've written a boatload of articles. But that's where I am right now.
Writing books is also one of the it's like writing a big blog, right? Taking all the articles and putting them into
it's even more work.
It's even more work.
Right. The other thing I do is I'm a Pluralsight and a Windelect author, so I have videos in both libraries. And the Pluralsight stuff in particular, I've got stuff out there that will make you a better coder. So that's kind of the breadth of what I'm doing right now for community.
Okay. Just remind me that we're going to talk about MVPs putting videos to Channel 9.
Okay. I did one for Channel 9 last week.
That's nice. Yeah, that's true. And Martina?
So what I do is I started blogging, and I do that a lot. I did it on TechNet. I have my own blog, and afterwards I discovered Twitter. I do tweet a lot. It's my daily routine in the morning, read what's new on Twitter. Not reading newspapers anymore, reading Twitter, and do things like that. I do a lot of public speaking about strategy, how to go to the cloud, what is the ideas behind, and so on. So I have the opportunity to travel a lot. I like that and meet other people. For instance, we met before at the aquarium last year.
I remember.
With Mark Minassian. I said, oh, she must know her stuff very well. And this is what it's all about. And then on Facebook, I had a user group there, a cloud user group, just to discuss interesting stuff there. And this is so amazing, because yesterday in the evening, a guy came to me and he said, "I just want to say hello because I follow you on Facebook and on Twitter, and you help me so much with what you do." Mm. And this is a good part, because when you blog, and even English is not my native language, I blog very often in German, and in German you don't get many comments, and it's like, are you interesting? You ask yourself, is my blog interesting? I don't get any comments. Are there any ideas, and so on. And this is so amazing if you get real-time feedback from users who say, oh, I just read that and it helps me. Mm-hmm. And this is also very interesting there.
I like it. That's really nice. Yeah. Lori?
About 5 years ago, I took over a local area user group in Kitchener-Waterloo. So that kind of was my start into the community, getting involved. I loved it so much, so then I decided that instead of just planning and organizing the groups, I actually wanted to start talking. Mm. So I used that user group as a platform to try out, you know, talking in a few sessions, and I really liked it. And then from there, I applied at conferences, and so I speak at Prairie DevCon, which is a major Canadian conference in the prairies. And so they run it in Winnipeg and sometimes in Regina. But next year it's going to be in Winnipeg for sure in April. So I was really excited about that. I love speaking at conferences now. I love speaking locally. I love connecting with people. As part of my user group, I also make myself available if people have questions, not just about technology, but soft skills. Because a lot of people in my community struggle with that. So I've like made a point to meet face-to-face with my members and help them with resume writing or preparing for an interview or understanding, you know, where there's gaps in their skills that they could fill. And I get a lot of satisfaction from doing that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then from there, I was just asked by A-Press to write a book. So I pulled in a friend of mine. I said, do you want to co-author a book with me? I was afraid to do it by myself because it is a big task.
Yeah.
So we did that together, and it was on Windows Phone Development, and we published that. So I was really excited about that. And I blog a lot. Sometimes I'll submit articles to the Canadian Dev Connections blog, which is a Microsoft run blog. But I also blog on my own, and that feeds through a group that I'm part of called Western Devs. So you'll see a lot of my posts come up on westerndevs.com. We're a group of developers that are very passionate. We do podcasts, and it's really great. I have a lot of fun with it. So it just feels like I started off with one thing, thinking I'm just going to do this. And then it just led into so many other things, and just opened so many doors, and then I met so many great people, and just constantly new things to participate in, and I keep saying yes, because I have a hard time saying no to anything, but I love it, I actually.
Forget to give me all your links and books so I can put them into the description. That's awesome. I'm so inspired right now.
And I just want to follow up on something Laurie said, is that I think that when I look at, you know, a long time in community, I was in community for nearly 10 years before I became an MVP in other spaces before I was with the Microsoft spaces. And so when I look back over that, this has been the core of like so many great relationships I have with people, you know, people that I'd really go to bat for, people that I've helped to bring into the community, people I know I've inspired. And people that are now, one of my best friends used to tell people that I had inspired her when she was starting out. And when that's your best friend, that's a big deal, you know? And so both the people I know casually and the people I know really well, which is of course why the MVP Summit, I'm so stoked this week because I get to see so many people. I say I do this for hugs. You
know? I love it.
Yeah, so it's just great. The people are just absolutely awesome, you know, meeting you last year. We had a really nice chat. At the aquarium, and Laurie and I have met before, and my son was at Waterloo, so I never quite made your user group, but I still will one day, so yeah.
That's awesome, and now you're meeting here.
Yeah!
So, you've been 2 years, 5 years, 18 years in the MVP program.
You must be one of the first MVPs.
That was my question. How did it evolve and number and quality?
Well, yeah, so the program has changed a lot. And just the short answer is it came out of the FoxPro community. Mm-hmm. So if you measure back into FoxPro, then there's people that are like around 23 years. So that's where it came when Microsoft bought FoxPro. I mean, we're talking ancient history.
I don't know what is FoxPro.
I know FoxPro, but I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's where the program came out of.
Wow.
And And it's been it's been through a lot. You know, there was a time no one knew what an MVP was, and you wouldn't even think about putting it on your business card. And now it's such a great program with such great visibility, and we've, you know, we've been through some times we don't quite know. Right now it's transitioning. We're moving into evangelism, which is maybe ideal, maybe not ideal. We don't know, but it's a big change to come out of support where it's always been. So there's changes that happen. But to me, all the changes so far have been almost all for the good. Microsoft likes to use us for cutting edge stuff. I wish they supported a little bit more the fact that it is only MVPs that are going to support the old Apple version of Word that happened back, the one they canceled that's now 20 years old. No one else is going to support that or VB6 other than people passionate in community. But other than that, I think overall the program's done really well, and we get really good support, I think, now that people know who we are around. But I'll tell you, there were tears in my eyes the first time I saw a banner on campus that was welcoming MVPs, because we used to absolutely be nobody. You know, we were just like, the program survived because, I really believe it was because there was a temp. I shouldn't say this on camera, but I will. I think the program survived for about 4 years because there was a temp, and every time her supervisor came to, you know, look at that budget item, it was easier to reapprove her than to figure out what the heck she did. But the program survived so much, and now it is so big and so wonderful and so many great people, and Microsoft brings us here, and we have so much contribution to the product teams. They have so much great interaction with us, and we develop the relationships that, you know, primarily the MVP's job is still to represent community to Microsoft, to tell Microsoft when they're getting it right and when they're not getting it right. And even though they're much more engaged in community than they used to be, they still miss things that we see. And that's still the core of what we do for community as MVPs, is to help Microsoft get it right. And I think we've done a pretty good job,
You're doing, it's great. Yeah. I mean, you tell us when something is right and you tell us when something is wrong. It's really awesome. I mean, I love that. Yeah. I mean, you really need to have that discussion with the user, and you are users and you talk to users. So it's really even better.
We have to be careful sometimes, because there'll be, you know, 100 things that we could talk about, and 90 of them are just fine. We never talk about those. The poor teams wind up with us saying, okay, these are the 10 things you're doing wrong, blah, blah, blah. And we tend to sometimes to focus on that. And we have to sometimes step back and say, you know, overall, things are going really well. But
Well, I think if everything is not doing well, you will not be here with Microsoft and be as an MVP and loving Microsoft. I see a lot of love from MVPs, which is really great. What did you think about the change this year? There's a change just came... This month, right?
In
October, we're in November. What do you think about that? That you can contribute in different areas, and you can be an MVP in two or three areas at the same time?
I think it's great, because naturally that's just what we do anyways. I'm not solely focused in one area. So it's nice that this program is evolving to allow us to have that, you know, additional recognition for the other technologies that we focus on, because a lot of them bleed into each other. It's never just, you know, one thing that we know. It's, you know, you have to know a wide range of things. We have to know cloud, you have to know mobile development, you have to know a back end, and it's just great. So I was really excited about that announcement.
That's nice. Martina, what do you think about the progress?
I think it's a good thing. I heard from the change the first time in the beginning of the year, because I'm also a regional director, and they put the regional directors in the same pillars. They said we have IT Pro and Cloud and so on. And so it wasn't so uncommon, and I think it fits to the Microsoft strategy very well. The danger I see is that maybe people will try to be now an MVP for everything. So, because they said, I can do Surface and Windows and development and IT Pro and everything. And I think that's not the idea behind the program, because you have your specialties and you're passionate about certain products and so on. And this is where we should focus on. But all in all, I like it a lot, because as you said, we are not doing only Office 365 or only development. We do other things as well. And this fit more into the whole strategy there.
Yeah. I like that. Okay, I'm going to ask you now a little question about women in tech, since, I mean, this is the goal of the show. So I don't know where, in what city you work or you live, so can you tell me how is the ratio where you work, and what do you think about that?
We're on this thin ice now. Yeah, over the years you kind of learn that people can really take wrong what you say. As soon as you say women in tech, a lot of people kind of get uncomfortable. And I guess
we have to say it though.
Yeah, so no,
they,
I do.
One day they will comfortable so. Will be comfortable with it.
Yeah, but it is. Oops,
that's fine.
I hurt my channel nine guy. You know, I've been around for a long time. I came out of a field, chemistry, which was in the 70s when I was in it, in the 80s, was much more male-dominated than computer science is. And so there was very much glass ceilings and all back in those days. So my experience has been both positive and negative. We are seeing dropping numbers. We've seen dropping numbers since about 2008, I think, which is very unfortunate. And that's why I love shows like this, because I really want everybody out there to say, we're kind of cool, you know? It's really a fun place to be. It's great fun. And so I want people to know that. At my company, I am the only woman working for my company, but we only have 15 people, so that doesn't mean it's really stinky stats. But it is hard to find the women in this industry. It's a great industry for women because you can gravitate to the place that has the best mood for you, has the best fit, and guys do that too. You know, I have my company. I'm the only one also who doesn't play soccer. So you know, there, it's not just that differentiates us as we go into a company. And I hope that we always focus on the other things that differentiate us. But at the same time, I'm also pretty passionate about getting across the idea that we can accept femininity as well as accepting women. So I have a talk that I occasionally do, and the premise of the talk is, if I walk into a room and I say, can a woman do any job here? Of course everybody will say, yes, 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 yes. And yeah. Guys, girls, everybody will say that, right? Of course. But if I walk into that same room and I help them to remind themselves of what they think femininity means, and then I say, are those traits valued in our industry? And at the same time, those are traits we desperately need in this industry. Sometimes we all just need to take, including me, a deep breath and say, let's listen better, let's be more thoughtful. And while these are just traits we associate with femininity, many men have these same traits. Many men have many feminine traits. I mean, we all are a mix. Yeah, yeah. We're all a mix. But it's tough for this industry to come out. And so, to me, that's the conversation that I personally want to have right now. Mm. But it's a really scary conversation because people completely misunderstand me all the time. And so I actually do a trick where I actually, at conferences, I shouldn't say this because now somebody sees it, they'll see it coming. I actually change clothes on stage. And I can do that. Lovely. I mean, I keep all my clothes on. It's all decent. It's generally like slacks and boots up over them, like legging kind of a thing. But it's very cool and fashionable. Starting out with, I'm wearing the uniform, and that's what I want us to really, in stuff like this. You know, we're all here. We're not wearing like a typical, you know, uniform. When I started in this industry, I would have never worn pink. But you know, we've come a long way, and I think we need to keep pushing that boundary to say it's really what I do, but part of what I bring to the table is my mix of masculinity and femininity. That's true of every guy that comes to the table, every woman that comes to the table, and I just would like to see us all kind of, you know, chill a little. And I mean, I don't mean to put guys down. It's just there is a little difference in how we address a meeting and how we do things. It's kind of a long answer, but for me, that's where I'm at personally with women in tech. Mm. I've been trying to answer the question of why we don't have more women for a long time, and I don't have the answer. So it's hard for me to address that question very well.
Mm. Okay. Martina, where do you come from?
Yeah, I'm also thinking about that, because when I started being in tech, I didn't care if there are men or women, and my counterparts, I just don't care. So it felt hard for me to answer the question, oh, you're a woman, you're in tech, why are you? I'm there because I'm passionate about.
Can you remind us? Do you live and work somewhere in the U.S. or in a different country?
No, I live in Europe, in Austria, and
is it similar to here? The ratio and everything, is it similar to the U.S.?
It's pretty much the same. It's pretty much the same. So the Austrian or European countries are not so different from U.S. Mm. They think they are, they aren't. But what I see there, when I began with that, and I did a lot of trainings in the beginning, and I trained men, and they said, oh, I didn't know a woman can do that. And this was the first time I thought about, because I didn't think about what I'm doing there, and that someone rates me by my gender or anything else. So it's difficult for me to answer the question to get more women in IT, because I think the best answer is each woman should look what she wants to do. And this is the most important thing. It's a little bit sad when I see in big meetings and you see women coming around the corner that men said, oh, this must be marketing, because this is such a role.
Yeah.
And so such a role model in there. And this should change. And I think that the woman in IT or men in IT stuff comes from the thing that you have to repair computers and stuff like that, build in hard disks and things like that. And women don't like that. But it's not that job anymore. Believe me.
I'm really bad at it.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
My husband explained me to pull in the cables in hard disk. And he said, there's a red line. It must fit there.
Although there's some women that are really good at it, let me just say. It's not me. That's awesome.
It's just, I think each woman should try what she wants to do and what she likes to do. And it took me till I was 20 or 17, 18, 20 that I discovered I love working with computers. And when you have that, stay there and do that, because it's boring to spend your life in a job you are
you
bored
like.
With.
Yeah.
So, and it's part of your life. So do what you want.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I like that.
Well said.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I'm from Kitchener-Waterloo, and I've worked at a variety of companies there, and I haven't noticed an increase in women coming into the workforce. It's always, you know, the one or two, I'm the one or two, you know, in a team. And even in consulting now, going to client sites, and the team I'm on now actually has more women than I've seen in a long time as far as the ratio. There's two other women on the team with me, and there's a team of six. So that's amazing.
Yeah.
Right? I'm having the best time at this one client project because of that. I enjoy seeing that. They're really great to work with. But in other companies, it's still, you know, it's still a long road. There's still a long way to go for that. And what I've seen over the years is I've worked with women who have just given up and walked away because they couldn't handle the challenges that came with it. There's a lot of stress. And you have to have a, like, really thick skin to fight back sometimes. And maybe that's a controversial thing to say, but it's true. I've had really negative experiences, but I've had extremely positive experiences, and I never let the negative experiences dictate my career. I've just held on to the positive and thought, that's why I'm in this, and that's why I love it. I started, my interest in computers started in grade 6. My parents bought me a Commodore 64, and I was like in love with the machine. I couldn't leave it. On the weekends, that was my boyfriend. I would just spend all day and night on this thing. And my mom would just come into my room and she's like, how are you spending all day? You know, go outside and play. You're not going to do anything with your life on this, this box. And when I graduated from, you know, from college and I got my first job programming, she was like, okay, I was wrong. But nobody knew then what it was going to be like, right, or what it was going to come of it. I just loved programming.
Right.
And I was teaching myself BASIC out of the manual that came with it. So for me, I think to get more women in technology, it's a more complicated question. It's not one thing. Starting them off when they're really young, to let them know that that's something that's available, and if there's an interest that sparks, then it grows, right?
Yeah.
I find girls are introduced to it. Well, in recent years it's become better, but girls weren't introduced to it until high school, and that's too late. And then the girls that are in it get pushed out of the field because they didn't have the support in the workplace. And, you know, and then there's just the fighters like me who are still left standing and want those girls to come back. So it's more of engaging girls every step of the way from grade 3 even, as you know, as early as grade 3, I think, and all through school. And then when women get in the workplace, that can't stop. There still has to be that support, that engagement. Companies, especially in Kitchener-Waterloo, because it's a startup culture, their job descriptions are more like, hey, we're cool, we have foosball, okay, awesome, but I'm a woman and I don't play foosball. And there are women that do, but I don't, so what's the perk for me to want to come work for your company other than it sounds like a boys club, because when I read job descriptions like that, to me that was, I don't want to go work there. That doesn't sound like it's going to be fun, because I've been there, done that, and I know what I'm in for. Like, give me some perks or some notion that there's something, some support for women in that company and respect. So,
well, I think you touched on something really important, which is as women think about their frustrations, if you're in a position where you are frustrated and you don't feel like you're getting the support, there's a lot. This is a big industry right now. Since we're expanding, it's a big industry. You know, go look out there and at least try one or two more times to find a culture. And it actually might be one that advertises as foosball, because the whole way that we recruit is extremely male-focused. And we do see things like advertisements that talk about that kind of thing, which may not be interesting in women, but sometimes those really are the companies that are trying to reach forward and actually can provide very good support for women, but you just kind of have to get a little closer to them and see what you're really going to find. I mean, the guys I work with, because they are guys, they're fantastic. You know, I had a stressful moment. Somebody's calling me an Uber. You know, I mean, they're really there for me. And so but everybody but me plays soccer. So, yeah. So you can thrive, I think, in those cool cultures, but you just have to go to that one and see how that works and take it from there.
Yeah. I agree with that.
So I guess I'm just encouraging any women that are watching, if you're like, God, my job is kind of annoying, you know. I've talked to people that actually were harassed at their job. Go look someplace else. Get your resume good. Find who your friends are. Network. If you don't feel like you're going to be able to pull good references from where you are right now, go make those references and go get those contacts and then go out there. It's a big, big, big world right now.
Even get involved in the community groups, because that's where a lot of the networking happens.
Absolutely.
And I found since I've taken over the community group in my area, I've seen an increase in women coming out now. And
nice.
That makes me happy to see that. It's like, if that makes them feel more comfortable because I'm running this group and I'm the face for this group, that's amazing. And I love it. I have students coming out and a mix of, you know, female and male students that come out, and I love that as well, because it's nice to see students getting involved before they enter the workforce, you know, having that opportunity to network and be part of it. So.
Yep. And I've spoken to hundreds of user groups around the world, and the user group that has the largest percentage of women that I have ever seen was Vermont.net, where Julie Lehrman has been running that group for maybe 15 years, I don't know. A long time.
One of the things on my bucket list is to go to Vermont just to go to one of her groups.
You should so do that.
Really,
you should so do that.
That's wanting to meet
so
her.
Do that, yeah.
Like her, like Julie Lehrman, Kate Gregory, and you are my role models. So
go talk to Kate's group. It's just across town.
But yeah, that was one of the things on my bucket list. I said, one of these times we're going to travel to Vermont just to go to Julie's
group. Oh, that's super nice. I asked her to come and she had something else. So next time I'll get her into the show. But you are all great. I was going to go through the rapid fire question, but I had a question in my head that I think that everyone who's watching would ask this kind of question. I see that you do a lot of things in your day. How do you plan to do all these things plus your full-time job? How do you make time planning work?
Well, essentially for me, when I'm at the client site, that's my focus, 100%. And my kids are both adults. They're in university and college and out of the house. So when I go home, my whole entire evening is free, you know, every night of the week and weekends. And I know that kind of sounds lame. But I also am with someone who loves video games. So he gets to play his video games all night. And then I get to allocate, you know, one night's for blogging, one night's for working on this side project, one night's for like community group, you know, mentoring, and I kind of schedule everything in and slot everything in that way, but it works out really well. Nice. But me and my significant other, we still have like, we have date nights, we go to dinner and movies, but we give each other that space. He gets to, you know, pursue his interests outside of work, and I get to pursue mine.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm also not working on a tight schedule. When I'm with a customer, I'm with a customer. Mm. But in the morning, normally I do all the social media stuff like Twitter and tweeting and things like that. And blog, it depends. A blog post can be done in 5 minutes if it's a short one and an interesting one and so on. And it can take days to write it. So the day's blog post is mostly on the weekends. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise you don't find the time, or in the evening, because you need some silence around you need to concentrate and things like that, and this is how it works. And what I'm used to work everywhere. So I just need my computer and maybe a headset and internet. And this is all done. You can sit me everywhere you want. And I can do my work there. So it's, and this is amazing that we can do that, because I used to have internet connection via a telephone line. Yes.
Yes, we remember. Yes.
And this was in those days, it wasn't possible to even think about things like that. You have to go to an office and do your work there. And now it's so amazing. You can do it from everywhere.
That's a tough question for me, because I'm kind of, this has been a year of transition for me. I spent a few years where I was able to be very focused on speaking and doing other things, and that it was just a time in my life I could make those focuses, and I'm refocused on a little bit more job. So I haven't really had a real job much for like 3 decades, and now I've got an 8-to-5 job, and I do have an arrangement where I can take some time off. But it's still very hard to manage, and I'm in the choir, and I do other things, and I like going to concerts, and I'm not willing to have it be completely focused life. So I'm really struggling to do all the things that I want to do, one of which is I do have an arrangement where I make less money, but I only work three-quarter time, and that's important to me, because all of this is my, you know, is very important to me, and I want to maintain that. And I was able to get that flexibility from my employer, and hopefully it's good for everybody, because I'm still doing what they want me to do. But I definitely struggle to have the balance. Right now, my open source project is completely on hold, because I haven't had time to focus on it. And then maybe it's good, maybe it's bad. I'll go back and I'll rethink that, with a lot has changed in the last about a year by the time I get back to it. And I'll rethink it and I'll decide exactly what its future should be. But I feel terrible that I have this open source project out there, that it really is my passion, but I had to completely set it aside for a period of time in order to keep a little bit of balance in my life. So I have to say that being willing to take the things that you truly love and you truly want to do and say, but I also really need to go hiking, and I also really need to, my son's getting married, and maybe I should help a little bit around the edges around that. You know, I shouldn't make that just be, I'll show up that day. So, you know, I've got these other things in my life that are very important to me, and traveling's important. I'm in, you know, London next week. I was in Las Vegas last week. So all that matters. And it's very hard right now for me to get that new balance right. But I think it's because I'm transitioning. Like Lori said, she has a, you kind of reach an equilibrium and you figure out what that is. And if you're just banging against every wall trying to do everything, you won't do anything well.
Yeah.
And taking a deep breath and saying, okay, right now my job deserves some focus. Right now a few things like speaking deserve focus. Right now I want to make people better C-sharp coders. Now at the first of the year, I'll rethink all that. And I think that thinking about that change and working with that change is important. Mm. I will also add that Scott Hanselman's blog is one you should read, because he does more than anybody, and he actually talks about how he does it. So
yeah,
an amazing blog. That's so true. You definitely should go back over the last like 5 years and pick out the where he talks about Pomodoro. He talks about how to manage your email, and he talks about these very
working from
pragmatic
home
things. Yeah. And that's really so.
Being
so use the resources
while working from home.
Yeah, that was a fun one. I remember that.
Yeah. And there's and Jeff Fritz is also working on the little podium thing. And there's a for the release, they did a hackathon, Microsoft people, and in that they brought Jeff Fritz in on his little cart. He was in the little monitor. There he is, walking through security. It was very cute.
Yeah.
So
funny.
Well, and an important part of that too is knowing and feeling good about saying no to things.
Absolutely.
Because I have a ton of requests.
It's so hard, right?
So much more. And, you know, at first I was saying yes, and I was getting overloaded. And now there are things I just say no to. And it's like, I'm okay with that, because I know if I spread myself too thin, then it's not going to be good, that stuff that I'm producing. I'm not going to have quality blog posts. I'm not going to have quality talks, because I'm so not focused on the right things and getting distracted with the wrong things. So.
Yep, exactly. Okay, we're going to end with one question. If you have advices to anyone who wants to be an MVP and any woman who is hesitating to become a woman in tech, what are your advices to these people? Could be one person, could be different people, I don't know.
I'm going to say follow your passion. You know, MVPs are people that were doing MVP stuff before they joined the program. They'll be doing it afterwards. So follow your passion, get out there. do stuff in community. That's what the MVP program is about. Assuming that you find passion and joy and networking and friends and support in your community, go look for it because you probably will find it. It's an amazing, it's an absolutely amazing community. So yeah.
Okay, I will switch the question because when I do something as a side project, uh-huh. all my friends ask me, "What would you gain from that?" I mean, mm-hmm. so I'm going to ask you the same question. What do you gain from all the community things that you do? Is it only passion and joy? Because I can live with it. I mean, I also tell them, it's my passion. I'm happy when I do it, so I will continue doing it. But I would think that maybe after some years, you will also have some story to tell that if you were not in that community, that thing would not happen. Do you see what I mean?
Oh, I have some of those. Some of them are still NDAs. There's been some of those are still NDA. I do take pride in the fact that the product is different because of what I've done and what my friends have done. But when I come back to, I can't do the whole list. And so I just think, when you say that, what happens to me is I think, well, there's John Robbins and there's Scott Hanselman and there's Julie Lehrman and there's Ward Bell. And I go on and on and on.
All these great
with
people.
These people. And these people are folks that they take my phone calls. You know, it's absolutely amazing that is the biggest thing to me is the people that I love and love me because I've been in this community. And for me, that really is that's the core of what mm-hmm. I got out of it, mm-hmm. is I'd be a very lonely, sad person if it wasn't for these people that understand me.
Okay. I like that answer.
Yeah, it's I love finding out new things, so and discover fresh stuff and so on. And this is why I really love to be an MVP and see what happens in the product and what is the idea behind that. And to make an influence on the product itself, yeah. and give feedback and get heard there. And on the other side, I haven't done it for anything, so it wasn't my target to become an MVP. I see a lot of people doing that, and they said, I fight for that because I will have more business out of that and so on. And I was one of the first 8 Office 365 MVPs back in 2011. And it was a surprise for me because I was an MVP for a product which was not even launched in my country at that time. That was the fun part. And the Azure MVPs, they made fun about me because they said, you don't even have a product. You are not an MVP. How can that work? Yeah. And this is what's really important to me, and speak to people and help them and give feedback there and see that it's valuable, the feedback, and it influences the product or the strategy, even that. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
For me, it's just more of I get to interact with people that are just as passionate as I am. Because in the workplace, everyone just thinks I'm a nut job, you know? And they're like, how are you such a cheerleader and such a fangirl for Microsoft, you know, or for, yeah. you know, and now it's Xamarin as well. Like, I love both products, and, like, well, they work together. And yeah. So I've always been called super nerd and, you know, all these names. Of all your
just cool. Yeah. Just cool to be called super nerd.
Yeah. And so now I get to be part of a group that is just as, you know,
they are all super nerds.
All these great things that are happening. So I have people that I can talk to as an outlet and just to kind of bounce ideas. And then that just spurs my excitement even more and my passion mm-hmm. even more, rather than having someone, you know, kind of just be like, okay, big deal, we don't want to talk. You know, we don't want to hear about anything. You know, it's like the Surface Book announcement. Like, when that happened, I was so excited. And
yep, exactly.
My fellow MVPs were the only ones who were like, yeah, that's amazing. And everyone else, you know, that I was talking about, like, yeah. And I'm like, well, I ordered it. So that's how much I love it. It like, took me 5 minutes to think about it. And so there's people that understand that side of me, and I like it. So I don't feel so crazy.
Yeah. You're definitely not crazy, and you're fine. Yeah. You're cool. Yeah. Well, thank you, ladies. Do you want to say bye to the camera?
Bye.
Bye.